Malachi chapter 3. We'll be getting, you know, we're getting pretty close to the end. Chapter 4 has only got like six verses in it. And so we're getting pretty close to the end. We probably won't be more in another 3 or 4 months. So we might want to be thinking about what's next. All right. But Malachi chapter 3, picking up in verse 9. Now, keep in mind up to this point, remember, he's been dealing with them in some pretty serious fashion up to this point. He's really been dealing primarily with the leadership, the spiritual leaders, the priests. And he's saying, listen, you guys, if you don't get your life together, if you don't get your act together, how do you think the people are going to deal with it? I mean, they're not going to do what God would have them to do unless you do what you're supposed to do. And so be the leaders you need to be. And so he takes it in verse 9. He actually even then takes it to that next degree to let them know the impact they've made on the nation. You need to understand that, listen, you have impacted the whole nation. You've caused the whole nation to have a problem. Now, keep in mind, we already talked about this, picking up back in verse 7 or so. He talked about the fact that they were robbing God, and he robbed them. He said, well, how have they robbed them? They robbed them in tithes and offerings. We'll talk a little bit more about that tonight as we hit on those that subject. But he really hammered home the fact that, listen, you guys are making a monster mistake here. You're forgetting the things that God has given you. You need to remember what God has done for you and how good he's been to you. And the last thing you want to do is withhold the things that belong to him. You just can't do that. You can't withhold those things that belong to him. So when we look at this picture, in verse 9, he picks up with some more of that thought. And also he takes it to that next step. He says, ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. All right? So now he takes it beyond the priest. He's saying, you have robbed me. And he says, even this whole nation. There are some people that believe he's saying, you've also robbed the nation. I believe what he is saying is the nation as a whole has also robbed God. All right. And so what we look at in this picture is not only had the priest robbed God, but because of their influence, because of what they had taught in their own actions, it was a widespread problem all the way through Israel. So much so that all of Israel is following the lead of these pastors, these priests, and these spiritual leaders had not set the example they should have set. And so now everybody is failing miserably before God. No one's doing what God called them to do. And so, you know, it's hard enough when, you know, we preach and teach, Sunday school teachers, you know this, children's workers, you know this. If you, even as a parent, you know this. If you're preaching and teaching to your children or to people who are listening to you and following your leadership, if you're telling them one thing and doing another, they're obviously not going to do anything. They're obviously not going to think that you took it seriously. And so when they look at this picture, they're always going to be, in all likelihood, they're going to be a step behind you. And so what happens is we need to understand that as leaders, we have to not only teach these things, we have to practice those things so that they can see in us, this is what God can do and this is what God does in your life. I want to be able to say, listen, this is where God has blessed me, and I believe with all my heart it's because, and some people might look at that and say, well, that's pretty arrogant. No, it's not arrogant at all to praise my God and to brag on my God. I'm not bragging on me. I'm bragging on God. And you're going to find out through the New Testament, when you read anything that Paul has written, Paul continually brags on God. Continually talks about all that God is doing and all that God can do, continually bragging even on God's people. He bragged on, you know, the church of Corinth and the giving the money to Jerusalem. He bragged on anything he could brag on. You never see him bragging on himself. Even when it seems that he's treating it in such an arrogant fashion, you find that ultimately he's saying, this is what God has done to me and done for me. I am the chief of sinners. I don't deserve one lick of it. And yet God still saw fit to do something like this in me. So it's a picture of where we need to be and what we need to do. And so he's telling these priests, listen, the whole nation is cursed. You're cursed. The nation's cursed. I mean, God can't bless if we're not going to serve him. And that bleeds over even to today. I mean, it goes without saying, if church leaders ignore certain, it's not just tithing, it's any doctrine, any theological stand, Bible standard, whatever it might be, where we stand about sin, immorality, where we stand on rebellion, all those things, understand that whatever we do, whatever standards we set, the average Joe Christian is going to follow our lead. If it's not important to us, it won't be important to him. If it's not important, if we don't recognize even the holiness of God. By the way, just to throw a little blurb in there, I think everybody here kind of knows where I stand on this. I want you to know this is Barry's theology, okay? But, you know, if we on stage, if we who are the leaders, if we in our Sunday school classes as teachers, if we who hold a responsible position in the church dress down, act down, sing down, that is, not take part in the singing, if we do anything that is not exemplary, I'm going to tell you now, the whole church is going to be a step behind us. And we need to understand the holiness of God and say, listen, God is holy. He expects me to be holy. I'm going to go to the extreme. If it's more, I'd rather do more than do less. Let me step it up rather than step it down. I want people to see who I am and that I'm holy. It's kind of funny. My neighbor said this to me like back in the summer. It's been back in the summer. And he says, I always know what you're doing. I said, what do you mean you always know what I'm doing? He says, during the week when you're doing your church stuff, he says, you always have on a pair of dress pants and a dress shirt and a tie. I said, okay. He says, now, if it's your day off, you might have on a pair of shorts and or jeans or a t-shirt. He says, it's pretty easy. He says, you're a telltale, man. You can tell what you're doing. He says, on Sundays, you always got a suit on. I said, you read me pretty well. You know, that's pretty much true. That's pretty much it. I think it's good when your neighbors can tell where you're going, what you're doing by the way you dress and by the way you act. That's important. I really think that's important. I used to love this. When I went to church at Memorial, we had finally moved close to the church. We always lived what I deemed a pretty good little distance from the church. Finally, we bought a house and moved within walking distance of the church. Now, within 6 months of the time I bought that house, keep in mind that I wound up coming here to pastor and drove 16 miles to church. And I always loved living where I lived because on Sundays, I walked to church. I don't know what it was. Debbie would bring the car later because I would go and I would drive the bus. And so I had to get there a lot earlier and I'd get the bus going and check it out, make sure everything's running, everything's working. Had another guy drove a bus and for a while he drove it from there. And so I'd make sure his bus was up and going and made sure it was fueled, did all that, you know. And I had taught a Sunday school class, so I had to make sure the coffee was on, all those things. Now, I had to get there early, but I could not wait to get up and get out of the house because there was something about walking down to the church with my Bible under my arm and, hey, guys, hey, how you doing, you know. They knew where I was going. I didn't even have to say where I was going. I think they could figure it out. And it was something about that that just, man, I'm telling you, it just made me feel really good, you know. And I'd walk sometimes in the neighborhood and the guys would see me out and says, oh, you must not be going to church today. You know, I'd be out there in a pair of shorts and a t-shirt, you know. You must not be going to church today. No, no, that's on Sunday. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just out walking today, heading over to the park, you know. And it's just kind of fun because people will recognize that about you. It's true in the church as well. Now, I said all of that just to say that what these guys did as priests made such an influence on the rest of the nation that they followed their lead. So if they didn't do the things they should have done, the rest of the nation kind of fell by the wayside. We set the standards, and it's important for every church leader to know who's watching. Those little kids are watching you when you're in there and teaching children's church, and you might not think they are, but they are. You need to understand that you know, your teenagers are watching you. They're watching every move you make. And they hold themselves according to our standards. They recognize that there's a different standard. And by the way, they'll abide by that, and they understand that better than we would ever imagine. Those things are so important. So we just need to be sure that we do that. Verse 10, and by the way, he talks about the fact that he's not only were they cursed, but they had cursed a whole nation because the nation was following their lead. And so the whole nation was failing to be blessed just because the leadership had failed in being the leaders they needed to be. Verse 10 says, "Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in my house. Prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it." When the tithes were not paid, this is an interesting thing. The priests were failing to pay their tithes. We talked about that last week. And because they were failing to pay their tithes, there was other people following suit. All right, so the tithes weren't being paid. Now, keep in mind, the nation Israel, those tithes was not only just for the temple, but tithes and such was also how the government was ran, okay? So everything about them, this was their taxes to their own nation, even though they also had to pay taxes, Persia at the time. But whoever was the leading nation who controlled their country, and at this time, it was Persia, so they also had to pay them tribute money. But the big thing is they needed to keep up their own city. They needed to keep up their own people and their own government, but they also needed to keep up the temple and the priests. And it was important for them to understand that. So if the priests were not doing that, the people were not going to do that. Now, in verse 10, he tells them that, listen, here is the problem, that if they don't pay their tithes, priests, understand, there won't be enough money there to pay you, and you're going to have to go back and do some farming. You're going to have to go back and take care of your own selves and not be able to do the priestly duties and not be provided for by the people if those monies don't come in. And so the priests were setting a standard that actually was working against them because they could not do their job because they had instructed the people by their own actions not to do their job. And so ultimately, the whole nation was not getting the things they needed to get. The nation didn't have the priests to do the job that they needed to do because they was having to take care of their own families by tending to the farms. And the priests are having to tend to the farms and not to the priestly duties because there's no money there to do it. And so the whole problem was that nothing that God had ordained and established was getting done because they had all failed. So he says, bring all your tithes into the storehouse. Not some of them, not a little bit of them, all of them. And so... By the way, the storehouse is just a room in the temple where they stored whatever the tithes that came in, whether it be the grain or corn, whatever it is that came in, they stored it in that storehouse for them to be able to use in whatever fashion it needed to be used. But here's the passage that I think is so cool. God says, if you don't think this is the right way to do it, he says, prove me. He says, prove me. He says, prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts. He says, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, pour you out a blessing, there shall not be room enough to receive. He's saying, give it a shot. See what will happen if you'll just do what I've commanded you to do. I always challenge newlyweds much this way. In Ephesians chapter 5, they give instructions as to the married couple. And he tells the husband what kind of husband to be, the wife what kind of wife to be. And I always tell him, if your only focus is on you, you're not going to get the blessings in this marriage that you really want. The marriage won't be what it ought to be. All right? But here's God's plan. God's plan. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands. That's the first part of the plan. First part is, wife, your job, your duty, your obligation in the marriage is to submit to the leadership of the husband, and in so doing, to do so as if every single solitary thing you do is to make that man happy, to please him. That's your job. Well, if you say that and stop, I mean, you get a lot of frowny faces on the women. But that's your job, ladies, to submit yourselves unto your own husband. Now, husband, what's your job? Your job is to love your wife like Jesus Christ loves his bride. Now, I got to love my wife like Jesus Christ loves the church, all right? So, now, here's my obligation. My obligation, now don't forget, what did Jesus Christ do for the church? He died for us. He gave his very life. He sacrificed everything. He didn't, it's even bigger than dying for us. You realize he left his heavenly throne, became man for the purpose of dying for us. He left his throne. You know, in the Old Testament, we always find that God is what? Spirit, correct? something changed that none of us can possibly fathom. Because when he became man, that portion of him, Jesus Christ, took upon himself flesh and died, there is something that forever changed. You say, well, you're saying that he's no longer spirit? I'm telling you that he'll come back and reign again in the kingdom as flesh. They touched him. Touched me. He was something more than spirit. Something changed forever. I can't fathom. Think about what God did in the person of Jesus Christ for you and I. Man, I think about that and I think, what love, what sacrifice. He paid the penalty that was ours. Paid it for us. What love. Now, he tells me, I got to love my wife like that. So what's he saying? Husband, love your wife so much that everything you do is for her. Put aside all of your wants and all of your desires. Put aside doing everything that just pleases you. And now your focus is, I want to please her. I want to make her happy. I want that woman to feel as though she married the best guy in all the world. And every decision I make ought to be a decision in her best interest. Now, put the two together. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husband. When you do that, what you're doing is you're pleasing everything, pleasing him in every way imaginable. And you know what? That's not hard to do, especially if he loves you like Christ loved his church, is it? Now let's do the flip. Guys, it's easy to make that decision to love your wife and to do everything for her if she's submitting herself to you, isn't it? That everything you do is to please her. If my job is to make her happy and her job is to make me happy, that's God's ingredients for a right marriage. So when you look at the picture, the whole picture is, guys, everything we do is to make her happy. Women, everything you do is to make him happy. That's the picture. I don't know any other way to describe it. So when I tell a couple, when they're getting married, I say, listen, give this a shot. I'm telling you, this is God's plan for a happy marriage. If you want a happy marriage, test God on this. Put it to the test. So that everything each of you do is to make the other one happy, you're going to have the ideal marriage. Put it to the test and see what God can do. Now, I said that because here he's doing the same thing. He's saying, guys, if you think that this idea of tithing is not a wise thing to do, if you think that there's just nothing to it, put it to the test. He said, bring all of your tithes to the storehouse and then see what God can do. See how many blessings he can pour out on you. I'm going to tell you now, I went through a spell when I was younger where tithing was something that was difficult. Oh, I can barely pay my bills. I surely can't pay a tithe. And man, we would wrestle. Sometimes we'd put some money in, sometimes we wouldn't. And it was a battle. It wasn't until I finally decided. I don't remember who preached it, somebody, maybe Butch, maybe my dad, I really can't remember. Whoever preached it, but somebody preached a message, it just really spoke to my heart. And I decided right then and there, we're going to tithe from now on. From now on, it doesn't matter, we're tithing. And you know what? It changed my life. And I had more money. I'm not going to tell you I never ever had a problem with money, but I'm telling you, I had more money than I ever had. It's like God says, listen, test me, try me. Too many people say, I can't now. You don't get it. My bills are overwhelming. You don't get it. You don't get it. You don't get it. I do get it. That's why I'm trying to tell you. I do get it. Tithe and see what God can do. Put him to the test. And I'm going to tell you, I think you might be amazed. And what he tells them here, he says, listen, if you'll just prove me, test me, put me to the test. Go ahead and do it. I'll show you what I can do. And what does he tell him he can do? He says, I will not, he says, and see if I'll not open the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing that there shall not be room enough to receive it. I give you so much, you won't know what to do with it all. Just watch what I can do. By the way, you do know there's some New Testament illustrations for that. Now, we already talked about the fact that the New Testament does teach tithing, by the way. Actually teach more than a tithe, but nonetheless, we already talked about that in another lesson. But look at what God can do with just a little bit, just so you know. How much did he multiply the bread and fish? If you think he can't open the heavens and pour out a blessing. How much bread and fish were there? Well, we fed 5,000 on one occasion. On another occasion, he fed 4,000 on just a basket full. And how much they collect when they got done? 12 baskets? Here's the thing that's amazing about that. I think about this in terms of the little boy. And I don't know if very many people stop to look at the little boy. The little boy gave up everything. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. That little guy was probably heading home with that food. And he's probably thinking, uh-oh, what's mama going to think? I'm giving away dinner. I'm giving away all of our food. I went to pick it up. Now here I am heading home. What's mama going to think? I'm giving all this away? Oh, man. But think about the faith of that little boy to be willing to say, I'll sacrifice my basket of bread and fish. Well, it wasn't much of a sacrifice when he took home 12 baskets. Amen. So when you think about it, what can God do? We think, oh, that's sacrifice. Guys, he just got through telling us if we don't give it, it's robbery. It's not sacrifice when we're giving God what belongs to him. That's not sacrifice. So understand that that was what was taking place in that. By the way, there are plenty of other illustrations. How about when Peter was instructed to cast his net? Somebody just preached on this. Was that you, Butch? When Peter was asked to cast his nets over, he'd been out fishing all day, hadn't caught anything. He's willing to take one of his nets and throw it down there. And God filled it up so much so that even when the other boat came and helped, it almost sunk the boats. He opened a window in heaven that was more than they could ever imagine. I think we forget what God can do. We put so much trust in what I've got. Boy, look at how much I've got in my bank account. I'm in good shape. I got news for you. That guy that's trusting in God and doesn't have a dime in his bank account is in a whole lot better shape. Because what God can do. And we need to never forget those things. You know, the parable of the talents, the guy that, you know, the ones that invested as they should and the other that hid it in the ground. God took that away from him. He says he'll pour you out a blessing. There shall not be room enough to receive. I want that blessing. I want that blessing in my home. I want that blessing in the church. I want that blessing. I can't tell you. I mean, I could go on, give you story after story about personal experiences, and I would imagine there are people in this crowd here that could do the same thing about times when I didn't have it to give and I gave, and God gave back abundantly. God gave back more than I could ever imagine. The one story that always strikes me, that I always find kind of comical, actually, is the, and many people will say, oh, that's just coincidence or that's just silly, but I remember one of those first times we was really wrestling with this tithing thing, and we had bills due that we couldn't make, and I told Debbie, I said, well, we've got to pay our tithe. We just got to do it. I mean, either we're going to do it or we're not going to do it, but we're never going to start if we don't do it, but this is not the week. It's going to be the week. And we paid it, not knowing how in the world we were going to pay our some of our bills that were still due. We lived day to day. You all been there. You know what I'm talking about. We lived day to day. I got to tell you, I don't miss checks. I get a check. I knew I got a check, and I cashed that check, and that check was used to pay bills. I don't miss checks. That night, she and I had come home from church, and I was putting my clothes away and changing. I opened the drawer I wear like little basketball shorts, not that it's any of your business, but just so you can get all up in my business, I wear basketball shorts to bed. And so I open my drawer and I pull out a pair of basketball shorts and a check flew out of the drawer with my shorts. I had forgotten and laid a paycheck in that drawer. I've never, to my knowledge, ever laid a paycheck in a drawer. I don't usually have it long enough to do that. It goes directly to the bank. Paycheck in the amount of my bills that I had to pay. And I got to tell you, I just sat down in the middle of the floor and cried. It was the most unbelievable thing. Crazy, crazy. And you're all looking at me probably thinking, yeah, right, okay, that's coincidence. It was your check already. It wasn't God's. It was just, that's silly, Barry. That's a silly example. Well, you can think what you may. Think all you want. But I'm going to tell you what, made a believer out of me. And I really believe that God just poured out on me the blessings that I needed for the day. I want those blessings, and I want them continually in my life. Verses 11 and 12. He tells them this, "And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast your fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts." Verse 12, "And all nations shall call you blessed, for ye shall be a delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts." He says, now here's what I'll do. When I talk about pouring out a blessing from the open windows of heaven, so much so that you can't even receive it, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make your land fruitful. He didn't say I'm going to rain dollar bills from heaven. What he's saying is, listen, I'll make your land so fruitful that you'll have plenty to eat. You'll still have to till the ground. You'll still have to get out there and do all the things you got to do, harvest the food, plant the seeds. You got to do all that. I'm just letting you know, I'm going to make your efforts fruitful. He says, and not only that, but I'm going to make them so fruitful that the people in the lands next to you are going to look at that and they're going to be envious of it. They're going to say, look at them. Why are they so fruitful? And they're going to want what you have and desire to have what you have, so much so that they're willing to come in and steal it from you. But I'm not going to let them do it. And they're just going to have to sit on the outside watching you be blessed. That's what God's telling them in that passage. He said they're going to have to just sit out there and watch how much I can bless you. And he said, all I need you to be obedient. Do the things I've called you to do. Be faithful. Be true. And you will not believe the blessings that I'll pour out on you. Folks, I believe that with all my heart. I believe that with not just tithing. I don't mean to sound like I'm only applying this to tithing, because in all honesty, it's to every command of God. I'm one of those guys that I am afraid to not have door-to-door ministry because God told us to go. If God said go, if I'm the only one going, I'm going. And I'm going to tell you now, there's been years, literally years, when I went out by myself. There's been times when folks went out with me and then for whatever reason they stopped going out or whatever the case may be, but I don't stop going. I'm afraid to stop going. I believe with all my heart that even if somebody doesn't come from that door-to-door ministry, that there are people coming in that need to be saved, or there's other opportunities I get because I've been faithful. Because God said, do it. Folks, I can't not do it. I'm afraid not to read my Bible. I'm afraid not to study. I'm afraid not to spend time in prayer. Call me what you may, but I want those blessings. And I'm afraid God will just say, well, Barry, if you're not going to be faithful, I'll withhold your blessing. Guys, I want that blessing. I really do. I want God to pour out blessings. And I really believe that he does so only when we're faithful. Only when we're faithful. And so I'm afraid not to do some of those things. But what an indictment against these priests. They've not only upset the Lord, wearied him, they've disobeyed everything. In verse 13, he says, your words have been stout against me, saith the Lord. Yet ye say, what have we spoken much against thee? He's saying, you have spoken out against me. Who does he think we are? I don't have the money to tithe. Who does he think we are? I don't have the time to go out knocking on doors. Who does he think I am? I don't have time to pick that Bible up and do all that reading. I actually had somebody say this to me. It's been years ago, but we were talking about Bible reading. And they said, Barry, I got to be honest with you. I don't have a half hour in the morning to read the Bible. I said, what do you do? What do you do? He said, what do you mean? I get up, take my shower, clean up, and I go to work. I said, and you don't have time to spend any time? How about in the evening? How about when you get home? Well, I don't have time to do it then either. Do you ever watch TV? Oh, yeah, I've got a couple of shows I watch all the time. But you don't have time for the Lord. You're the ones going to miss out. Not me. I'm going to take the time. I want to make sure that it's not, and I don't mean to sound like I don't watch TV. I do. I don't mean to sound like I don't read a book. I do. I do a lot of things. I, I'll go to a ball game every now and then. I like going, I'm going to have grandkids growing up, probably playing ball and soccer and all that, and I kind of enjoy watching that stuff, and I will. But I'm here to tell you, nothing had better replace what God has commanded us to do if we want to be blessed. If we want to be blessed, we need to be faithful in the things he's called us to do. And these guys were saying, listen, I want to live my life. I want to do as I please. I want to do my own thing. And they speak against God. I can't believe God would expect this. Do we not have that today? I mean, they may not blatantly say things like that, but they'll tell you, I don't think church is important. There's no point in me going. I believe in Christ. I believe in Jesus, but I don't see no point in going to church. You know what they're really saying is God isn't going to tell me what to do. God's not going to tell me what to do. I'm not going to read my Bible all the time. I'm not going to just sit and act like a fool. I'm not going to go tell people about Jesus. It's my own personal thing. Okay, it's your business. I will, because I want God to bless. I want him to bless my life. Don't expect God to bless if we're not going to follow his commands. So he's letting them know, listen, here's what I can do. I can make you fruitful. By the way, I love that concept when you're talking about spiritual things. You know, when we look over there in the Old Testament and we talk about, coming in and rejoicing and bringing our sheaves with us. I like that concept. The whole idea about weeping and sharing and doing all the things you do so that you can see people come to know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. I don't care if they came to Christ because I shared with them. It is exciting just to see people get saved. It's exciting to know that people are still being won to the Lord. Oh, I love that picture. I love that. And I love knowing that God still does such things. So God poses to them a question, and then he answers his question in the following verses. But there's the question, yet ye say, what have we spoken so much against thee? Say, you're going to ask me this question. This is God. It's funny how he does this. It's real sarcastic. Because he tells them, he says, by the way, here's the question you're going to ask. What have we said against you? What have we done against you? That's the question. And God knows the question they're going to ask. It's not a secret. And so in verse 14, he says, ye have said, this is the question, it's vain to serve God. Who would ever say it's vain to serve God? You know what the word vain means, right? Anybody know what the word vain? Just shout it out. Empty. It means there's nothing to it. There's no benefit. There's no profit in serving God. That's what you've said. There's no profit in doing what God said to do. There's no profit in going to church. There's no profit in tithing. There's no profit in studying the word. There's no profit in prayer. There's no profit in those things. Nothing comes of those things. What's the big deal? Nothing comes of all that. You're not any better off than I am. That's why the old prosperity preachers have made a big way, because everybody thinks that there ought to be prosperity in this world, and that's what singles us apart or sets us apart from everybody else, is that God gives us prosperity in this world. Nowhere in Scripture does it teach that he does that. They miss the point altogether. And so the blessings God's pouring out is that of having a relationship with him, of being able to see others come to know him, of knowing that we've got an inheritance beyond what the world can imagine, and knowing that he will take care of us here and watch out for us and provide for our needs. We might be persecuted. We might even be killed for the cause of Jesus Christ. But understand and know that he'll always be with us and never forsake us. That's our blessing. That's what we understand and know to be a true blessing. So when I look at this picture and when I look at what God is doing, I think about this. How can anybody say it's vain to serve God, yet people all the time, whether they realize it or not, are saying that's pointless. God will still bless me. And we might say outwardly, this is what I have to do to be blessed. And then inwardly, I don't know that I really have to do that to be blessed. I think God will bless me anyway. I think God will bless me no matter what I do. It's vain to serve God. What profit is it that we have kept his ordinance and that we have walked mournfully before the Lord of hosts? What's he saying? He's saying, what does it profit us to follow his commands? And he's saying, and to walk mournfully? He's saying the things of God is such a hardship and so difficult. What in the world does it profit to go through all that? I mean, have you ever had anybody tell you that kind of thing? I can't believe. I've had guys that I work with tell me that. I can't believe. Do you seriously give 10% of your money to the church? I said, no, it's usually a little bit more than that. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. Yeah, do you seriously go to church 2 times on a Sunday? Yeah, and I go in the middle of the week too, and you know, this is back before I was a pastor, and yeah, you know, and I go out on visitation one night a week, and yeah, I usually try to go over there and get some buses together and stuff because I run a bus ministry, and I make some phone calls. And you gotta be kidding, you spend most of your life there. You know, people don't get it. And you know, to them it seems like a hardship. There are people in the church that apparently seem to think it's a hardship because they can't get up and come. They can't manage to be here, so it must be a pretty much of a hardship for them. Oh, it's just too hard to get up. Oh, it's just too difficult to do this. I can't believe you. It's a lot of time, a lot of effort. I can't believe. It's mournful. It's something that just seems like such a hardship. And that's the picture they're painting. They're saying, you know, it's such a difficult thing to do all that, there's not really even any profit from it. There's nothing to gain from doing all of that. You know, and that is an interesting thought because, quite frankly, I'm saved by the grace of God. And when I'm saved by the grace of God, if I'm truly saved, we as Baptists understand and know that we don't lose our salvation. So you're not going to lose your salvation because you don't come to church. You're not going to lose your salvation because you don't read the Bible. So I guess in a matter of speaking, from their perspective, they're thinking, I don't get anything more with all of that. But here's the thing. If you're truly saved, those things should be a desire. I have a desire to please my wife, love my wife. But in addition to that, when I think about this whole concept of what I do, there are rewards that you're looking for, and there are pleasing God, and there are blessings that come as a result of it. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, they have, because if you remember, we talked earlier, I don't remember if it was last week or the week before, he told them, remember those things. So they obviously knew of them. And yeah, they had a lot of scripture, because remember Ezra, dear Nehemiah, Ezra got up and read for half a day, stood up on an altar and read scripture, you know, so they knew the scripture. But what they were finding is they were looking at their life and feeling like there's no benefit in following the commands of God. It's just a bunch of hardship. It just seems like it's just a bunch of rules and regulations, and it doesn't profit me anything. That's kind of the picture that they're painting when it talks about that they're serving God, but serving him mournfully. All right? Well, it kind of, and I totally agree with you. In fact, that's kind of what he's telling them there when he tells them that they hadn't. What was the point? What was the verse? I just read the verse a second ago, not 14. Your words have been stout against me. So they obviously didn't put a lot of stock in those things. They obviously didn't feel like it had gotten them anywhere. You know, we've been in captivity. We've done all this. What does it serve? What is the point? They had obviously come to that conclusion for whatever reason. All right. We'll pick up in verse 15 next week. All right. And we got a lot farther tonight than we have been getting, so that's not really all that bad. All right. We moved on tonight, man. I'm telling you. Good that you all out tonight. Thank you so much for being here, and appreciate you. Floyd, dismiss us.